Ciao ragazzi and welcome to the latest episode of the Fratelli Rugby podcast. I'm joined as ever by Mike and Ottavio to talk all things Italian rugby, talk a little bit about the Rugby World Cup final, a bit of a URC review and looking at the unveiling of Gonzalo Quezada as the Italian head coach. But first of all, hello, a ciao to Mike, Ottavio. How are we? Are we okay?
Ciao Mike, ciao Marcello. Everything perfect here with some nice rain in Bulgaria today. So let's go. Oof. Let's go some rain. Oof.
We had one of the worst storms down here, like 85 mile an hour winds. A tree knocked down, Ottavio. Tree was on the road. Everything stops in England. If tree falls on the floor.
Everything stops. Yeah, we had Storm Babette last week, and this week we've got Storm Kieran.
Storm Kieran. It was the rage to be not be anymore the coach of Italy. Storm Kieran.
Storm Kieran trees. Crowley on the rampage.
Yeah. Just absolutely tearing up trees.
Right. Gents, we'll jump straight into a bit of a URC review. And just like in week one, Zebre come up just short. Now, I watched that game back in full a couple of times, actually. Ottavio, what did you make of Zebre? Obviously, very, very good for large parts. But just like that game against Elsa, ultimately, it was a very similar game. Zebre losing their way for a little bit after half time and then in the sort of the last 10, 15 minutes, discipline slipping, and ultimately that's what cost them what should have been a second win in a row, shouldn't it, really?
Man, you're right. It should have been another victory in the pocket for the Zebre because they're playing pretty well. The fact is that all they do in attack, they score again more tries than the winning team. They lose when the tries are soft. I'm thinking about the kicking reception by Nagy in their own 50, and from there they attack, and a couple of tries, the one from Protero, the second one actually, and the third one, they were just like big holes in the defense where they should not have been. So that sucks in defense, but still there are improvement and there are achievement, I can say, from some of the players. Jesse is one of them, and Gregory, guys. Gregory just arrived.
Scoring tries for fun.
Yes. It seems like Prisciantelli never passed a ball by hands to Gregory. The only kick.
Just kick.
So it's crazy. It looks like, what is the Aussie rule? That kind of Australian sports when they kick, yeah?
Aussie rules,
Yeah, Aussie rules between Prisciantelli and Gregory. But, sure. And the most important things, another week of 100% accuracy throwing the ball. And that is something really good because we were suffering like crazy. Yeah, 100% good. This week with Manfredi in the mix too after Ribaldi last 2 weeks ago. So it's going good.
I think after a season of not winning a single game, 4 points from two games, ultimately they could have very easily had 10 points, generally could have had 10 points quite easily, Mike. But I guess Ospreys capitalised on those little bit of mistakes in defence and also on that ill discipline, especially in the last sort of 10, 15 minutes. Because when Zebre, I think when Gregory scores his first just after the hour, Zebre are bang on top. They go in places and then that discipline slips, doesn't it? And that costs them, and that must be incredibly frustrating at the same time as being very positive all at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, with Zebre, it just goes to show what a young team, how badly sort of 10 negative minutes can affect a bad team, because that's really all it was. They were definitely building in at the end of the game as well. So it was just a poor 10 minutes where maybe, you know, you lose some of the leadership by some of the people coming off the pitch. And then there's a point where people are trying to work out, you know, whom they should be sort of following, because there are a few leaders that come on off from the bench, and I feel like that little bit of indecision definitely has cost them. Like it definitely cost them at the end of the last game, you know, with maybe making not the best decision to tap and go, as an example. So I think a lot of it does come down to maybe some naivety by the young players. And yeah, all it was a window where, you know, 10 minutes, it just didn't go their way. And that capitulated and you know, the best teams capitalize on that. So tough lesson, but definitely a lesson for them to take a lot away from. And, you know, they can be very proud of their performance away from home, might I add, because that's one of the sort of key areas that Zebra have struggled with recently, you know?
I've been waiting all week to talk about one person in particular. I've been waiting all week. Lorenzo Panni's left foot, mamma mia. Wow. Oh, a cannon. A cannon of a left foot. One of that the 22 to the 22 was incredible. But genuinely, he has got some serious distance. That is going to be, one, a massive weapon for Zebre and also for Italy. That is a massive asset to have for someone that's got a left foot like that.
Man, the kick into the line out for the last try when there was a penalty, he just put the ball down in the corner into the 22. That was another huge kick. And actually, also the 2 weeks ago, he was pretty good with kicking the ball far, far away. Big left boots. So, yes, love it. The way he's, and also, man, the way he's playing in attack, actually. Really good. Think about the offload for Gregory at the end of the game. Talking about kicks, it sucks that Prisciantelli missed two conversions, because those are the 4 points that they dig the difference between Ospreys and Zebre, because on the BG try and Gregory's try, 2 points and 2 points, something was different. But we're going to learn from there, and we maybe Montemauri, Eden, and the other 10s are going to come and take duty. Or maybe Lorenzo Panni is going to be one of them.
Sure, and that's what I was thinking, is a lot of the time as well, Prisciantelli was sometimes kicking to touch as well, and I just thought, why not just keep giving it to Panni, because he's got the distance, and also maybe, you know, what is he like off the tee? I haven't really seen that, so we wouldn't really know. Anyone stand out for you in particular, Mike?
In particular, I think Otto mentioned Jersey. I always say he looks like he smoked crack, like the way he runs. It's always very flat-footed, but he just looks like a maniac. And he's just so strong into contact for somebody. He's such a wiry guy. But, yeah, you know, like Gregory, fair play. Like URC, what URC? He's come in and he's really stamped, you know, his pedigree very early on. And long may it continue. Hopefully, obviously, he takes a little bit more out of the next couple of games. But I think I texted Otto whilst we were watching, because I've got a bit of a soft spot for Jon Nekulai.
Jon Nekulai, our friend.
yeah. And he was having such a good game. And I texted Otto and I immediately regretted it, because it went from bad to worse. Like, he was lying on the floor, gave away the penalty and the yellow card. He was a lot of... It's frustrating, because what he does in the scrum, he's very good. Like, he's very good at what he does in the scrum, but he just needs to work on sort of the open, loose a little bit, because it's just so unfortunate, to be honest.
But the set piece is looking good, isn't it? Generally,
yeah, they look sharp, easy, not really complicated set piece, but they're working, because Lukin actually is doing a really good work putting on the front foot when he attacks the ball, but also when he passes behind. So Prisciantelli has the time to, like, first double pump in the ball before passing. That helps a lot, because then the legs are there for the wings. And actually, this weekend we saw Franco Smith Jr. playing at 13. I think also because Fethullah Paea became dead this week. So congratulations to Fethullah Paea, because the kid was born in Italy. So, in some years, we're going to have an Italian Tongan player available, qualified, an Italian qualified Italo Tonga, like Patrick Pellegrini style.
Yes, no? Nice.
Like that.
Like Lionel.
This time he's going to come with us. Paella. With Italy. No, but I like Guido Volpi, actually, again. Because it was one of the players that we didn't see a lot last year. And he find his spot. It sucks because Andrean is really good, too, at six, because those are the six. But let's see. The season is long.
I'd still like to see Andreani at lock, to be honest. I know he was doing it at the back end of last season. I've been saying it a lot. I'd love to see him at lock. I know I think he's 6'4", so he's not the tallest. So is Wookie. So he could fit that mold, you know.
Like pushing there a little bit, like was Jack Ferrari when he was young with the under-20s when he used to play the first year at lock, and then he moved behind. So he still have the skills as a jumper, because he's the first option on the front of the lineout, but also he can work hard and in the field.
What are your thoughts on Jack, to be honest?
Man, Jack Ferrari, it's a good player. It's a really good player. Maybe we don't see him so much ball in hand, like smashing people, but you can see that footwork he have, really good. And when he tackle, the player goes down.
That is something
he really iron the player every time. Like boom, the tree is falling. So that is something really good. Jack Ferrari can be a really good player in the next years, in the next cycle of Italy rugby. So hope the best for him.
He's a wrecking ball, that bloke. That bloke's got he's got everything that you need from a flanker. He's that sort of aggressive.
Yeah,
not aggressive, naughty bloke. He just looks naughty. Looks like as a kid he was probably told off a lot, because he gives me that vibe that every flanker should be that, though.
Yeah, he's got a bit of sea about him, doesn't he? He's got a bit of, and I like to see, like, Fulsko's got a bit of sea about him as well. Going off the pitch, he just loves it, doesn't he?
He just loves it. Another wrestling move this week, Fusco. 2 weeks ago, he did the same. So let's see. For now, those are the crazy heads, let's say, in Zebra. Trulla, we have still to wait. Trulla, what's going to do? Maybe this week is going to be his game against some bulls.
When Trulla gets on the pitch, they're just people start hiding knives and stuff.
The Peaky Blinder. Trulla Blinders we have
there. Peaky Blinder. But massively encouraging for Zebra, for sure. All seems to be going in the right way. I think we should definitely give a shout out to Pen Cambriani, who's obviously had surgery now, and on his knee. I imagine that'll be quite a lengthy time out. So first and foremost, best wishes to him with his recovery. Obviously very gutting. We saw a very quick cameo of what he could do against Ulster, the pace that he has. So it's one of those where it's bitterly, bitterly disappointing for him and Zebra fans, because signed him and he looked everything that we were. He looked exactly the sort of player that Zebra are going to thrive on this season. So to lose him is particularly gutted, but obviously all the best.
All the best.
Yeah.
Gutting. So from Zebra to Benetton, who for pretty much, other than a penalty in the 13th minute, conceded 3 points all game to, let's say, a slightly understrength Munster side. But to be 13-3 up and then 13-6 up going into the last play to lose is, to obviously throw away a win and draw. That was,
it felt like a loss, though, that one.
It is definitely one of those where it's a chance miss, because Benetton were potentially going 2-from-2 there. So to not win, Ottavio, that is bitterly disappointing for them.
Yeah, because everything was like little details changed the game. And I go...
Fine margins, again, as Mike would say. Fine margins.
The fine margins, lads. The fine margins, right? because I think two turning points of the game were actually two lineouts, one the steal and the second one on Nicotera. So sorry, the first one was like not throwing straight, and the second one was the steal of the ball, who leads to the penalty, the Zanon penalty. So twice, the first time at the minute 66, you were almost, you were in the opposite 22. So from there, you can score, you can get a penalty, you can do a lot of stuff, but that didn't happen. Actually, you just lost the line out, and the second one was 3 minutes to go, and the ball was there, but they lost it. Actually, they track it properly, mastering defense with the line out, they steal it, and from there they grow and they score again. So that sucks. But man, good stuff. Think about their still missing players. And we saw Mr. Malakai Fekitoa in the field, which was amazing to see. So gutted, let's say, for the Benetton results, but they can do much, much better. Looking forward to that.
That's the thing, Mike, isn't it? Go on.
I was going to say, Fekitoa came, came on, got three turnovers that game as well. Three outside turnovers.
It was more massive in defense than in attack. Because he had just a couple of good carries, but then he went to support into rack. But defense,
As was Drago, actually, wasn't he? Didn't he do 17 tackles out of 19? I think. Don't quote me on that. Right. Don't quote me on that. But I think it was 17 out of 19. But still, really impressive for an inside centre to do 17 tackles. I think actually that was the most from Benetton. So
it was 17 tackles, Filippo Drago.
Those are insane, right? Those are compared insane to, numbers.
And then for Munster's highest tackler was Gavin Coombs with 7.
I mean,
the number 8.
Statman March, look at me go. Woo! I'm coming for you, Savio. I'm coming for your title.
Come. Happy to have more.
No, I will stop. You can do stats from now on. That's not me.
Can't take it away from Art.
No, I can't.
But yeah, so like it's I pointed out Drago for a different reason last week. I just think he's becoming more and more complete. Like I noticed that he's trying to make his left boot slightly more educated. You know when to use it and stuff. He's definitely trying to work out like where there's space for the grubber and stuff. Like he's becoming. He's improved so much, so much. He was a good player when he first went to Benetton. He's becoming a great player now. He needs to continue on the trajectory that he's building. I think he's very much like what Morisi could be if he was slightly more rounded as a player. He's going to be
more laggy.
An answer
with injuries.
Yeah,
because man. How sad is for Morisi having all those injuries in the past? And actually, let's see if this week. Sorry, if I go back to Zibri. Let's see if this week is gonna be in the team, because he's training with Zebre, so he's gonna be one of the big name of the season for Zebre now with Polledri. So let's see. Yeah.
Now Cambriani's out as well. The space isn't there.
Yeah, there is space. And talking about Benetton, I like the way, of course, Lucchesi is playing, but also, again, Spagnolo. Man, Spagnolo is working really well in the field. The way he take all the way, his scrummaging pretty accurate to be one of the second really, really highest level he never played, because he was in the Serie A Elite, which, yes, it's a level, but it's intermediate. It's not highest level possible to compete.
Yeah. Another interesting thing there. You know, Benetton apparently have the best scrum so far in the URC. They're ranked number one. This is according to the URC data. They're ranked number one. So, like, for someone who went from the top 10 straight in, and he's doing this now. he's picked it up pretty quickly, hasn't he?
Oh yeah, but for example, in the second half when Pasquale came in, also they won a couple of scrum right away, and that was something surprising me because Pasquale always, for me, it's tougher in the scrum, but I saw him pretty well, so happy for him.
Yeah, the work that they've been doing in the scrum clearly preseason is definitely sort of coming through, and Pasquale, you know, with his He-Man hair. comes in all his glory, wins a penalty, rocks on.
Man, Pasquale, it's so Italian American style. Think about him with some hair on the chest,
a big gold chain.
Forget about it. You can see.
Forget about it. Come on,
right? Eating a baguette, not baguette, like a sub with. With
marinara sauce.
Marinara sauce and meatball.
Meatball marinara.
Gabagool and everybody.
Gabagool.
Calls everyone combat.
Dear me. Well, we're veering off there.
But we should say also, we should speak about the other prop on the left side of the scrum that came in the second half, Federico Zani. Because it's important, because he was our guest during the Rugby World Cup, first of all.
Yep.
So, guys, go listen to the episode in Italian, actually, with Federico Zani. But he's a no more to the international rugby for Italy after 25 cups. So I think it's time to say thank you to Federico for his effort during these years. We had the pleasure to speak with him. A great man, a great human, I can say.
That's
something really, really pop in my mind. Maybe not the best, but a man that you need, those kind of men in a team. So
a good gentleman. I was unfortunate to not join in with that one, Mike. But like Otto said, he's definitely worth a shout out because. Yesterday, he's announced his retirement from international rugby, 25 caps, but someone that will have just a big name in the camp, someone that was good with the other players and the younger guys as well. So a shout out for him.
Yeah. Obviously, big conduit of Italian rugby. And someone who, you know, listening to sort of the Eddie Jones interview that came out today, someone who probably aligns quite nicely to him, maybe not the best technically gifted, but what he lacked in sort of his technical ability, he made up with like his rugby IQ and really trying to understand like the game and the nuances and how to best improve from that side. So he might not have been the best physically gifted player, but what he lacked in physicality, he made up with intelligence. And he's a player that I'm sure will go on and do some great things in a coaching capacity. So all the best to him. And you know, like he's gonna have a big role to play this season for Benetton. So it's not all over for him. He just needs to sort of get his ducks in a row. What he wants to do afterwards, but he's a big important part, I'm sure, of the future of Italian rugby as well.
He is a rugby addicted. He can be all day at the Monigo training, watching the girls scrumming, because he coach with the Red Panthers.
Yeah.
So, which is the women's team of Benetton. It's going to be something cool because probably next year, I think they're going to start some URC with the women's franchise. So Benetton and Zebre. And it's going to be great. So, because they buy a lot of new players in, like Magatti, just to say one of the huge name of Italian women.
That's brilliant news.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Yeah, let's see how they're going to grow the project in the couple of years. But we need that kind of stuff, right?
For sure.
Also to grow the game, because actually we're better on the women's side than the men's side of rugby.
Yeah,
I was going to say, the women's side's a very good side, actually, aren't they?
Yeah, such a good style of rugby, too.
Did they win? They won all of. Did they not win all of their games in the WXV competition?
Man, they won it, but they missed for 3 points to be the first.
Yeah, because Scotland won, didn't they?
Yeah, but the style they're playing, it's entertaining. Yeah. Even after changing coach, because they had like for 15 years, I think, Di Giandomenico, and now it's Nanni Reinieri on. It's big change after like Sir Alex Ferguson moving and then somebody coming in, on like in football style. Even I know Ferguson was a lot more time, but that is the comparison we can do for Italy women's.
Yeah, it's there's an interesting stat here, right? And I wonder if it's the same in Italy, but the best, the most successful teams in the RFU, so the most successful grassroots teams in the RFU have a strong women's game, because that means that the teams afterwards are more likely to engage in the social aspect afterwards. And, you know, typically it's partners that are playing. So it would be, a wife and a husband playing for both teams, which means that actually they're going to spend more time in the clubhouse. Clubhouse is more profitable, which means that there's more of a community feel because they can invest more in. So and how that mini sort of environment helps grow rugby. So Otto, you saying it's important for Italian rugby? It's important for Italian rugby in so many different ways. If we can start promoting the women's game and giving the women a reason to want to play professionally within Italy instead of coming to, like, you know, the Premiership here, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Berigoni is going to play with Sea Sharks. Sorry, Mersh.
That's the thing. I think women's sport is generally on the rise across the world, that not just rugby, but obviously in football as well. But obviously the Red Roses with England are massive, and they're getting sort of selling out crowds, and the interest there is massive, and that's growing considerably all the time. So especially for Italian rugby, if we can sort of keep rising that and keep pushing that, that is only going to help. That is only going to help tenfold. Having moved on to sort of international rugby, we will go on to the Italian men's side now. Gonzalo Quesada has been sort of unveiled as Italy's new head coach, obviously replacing Kieran Crowley. Ottavio, what did you make? Obviously, we had our first sort of words properly from, well, we had a few words from Quesada at the press conference. What did you make?
So from his words, not so much, because he didn't speak a lot on the public online on YouTube conference, but he spoke later on with Lorenzo Calamai, other from On Rugby Meet and stuff like that. So we know a little bit more. I follow him since maybe 2018 as a coach, because I love the way he was coaching Jaguares. Then they reached the final in 2019. But what he said, of course, first of all, everybody's going to be happy in Italy because he was speaking in Italian. He spoke in Italian in the last couple of months. He really tried hard to learn, and you can see the results, actually. And that was the good point. Not the issue, but something that really surprised me is when they ask about the staff. And he said, I still have to meet the staff. I spoke with Roselli, with Fabio, and with Marco Bortolami, so the two head coach of the franchise, but still I have to go meet my staff. I don't know my staff. So that surprised me, because when you think about changing a new coach, usually you change. The staff goes away and you bring your man in it. But with Italy, at least I think Moretti and Gusen, they have a contract until the end of 2024. So for the full next year, they're going to be on charge. Now let's see later on. But I think scrum and defense again, they have just to coordinate everything together, because maybe the point of view on defense can be different between Marius Gusen and Quesada. Quesada, it's also a really good defensive coach, but he can be skill coach, attacking coach, is all around it, let's say.
So, Mike, I guess that is the probably quite a rare situation, really, that a head coach is coming into a setup replacing one coach and having to sort of continue with the previous coach's staff. That is not something that you usually see. And that, like Ottavio said, the fact that he hasn't met them yet and he's coming into that situation, that probably isn't the ideal scenario for us, really, is it? Because that sounds like we're going to be getting to the Six Nations and probably head coach and assistant coach still figuring stuff out. So that is an unusual situation, isn't it?
I think regardless of like the physical coaching staff that are there, right, the clear delineation needs to be obviously between the roles that they're supporting. But the main concern for me is the buy-in. So Quesada said in the interview that he has a clear objective of how he wants to play, the style and the philosophy that he wants to bring. So that for me is more concerning. If there is no buy-in, then that is a massive issue, yes. But if there is a distinct alignment between Moretti, Goosen and Quesada on the style they want to play, the philosophy they want to implement, and the objective, right? So the objective for Crowley was respect and credibility. I think he achieved that. Now it's going on to more of a winning aligned, mandated slightly by obviously the Federation, but that's the goal. So if they can align there, regardless, I think, you know, they're going to be in a good spot. And I think as well, you know, with Moretti and Goosen hasn't been doing badly. If we look at sort of the trajectory that the Italian defense has had since he's been, we were hitting sort of the 85, 90% mark, which is, you know, a good trajectory. It's like, so it's not always about, you know, in with the new and out with the old. We do have to sort of look and really evaluate, like, where do we need to improve? Like, and again, you know, we've said it before, if a couple of points, a couple of millimeters, you know, went our way, we wouldn't even be having this discussion right now. So it's not about ripping everything out, you know. Quesada said himself, there is a lot of good, yeah, right? He saw a lot of good, but he wants to bring his own stuff as well. He wants to see and do his own stuff. Sorry, Otto. Yeah.
No, but I'm just add something to what you're saying. For example, Goosen and Quesada, because we, for example, know, because Goosen told us in the pod, like, they're always looking for, and also Federico Zani told us this, double hits in defense. Maybe something that we're not going to see, because I remember not to see so many double hits with Stade Francais, even with Gastard, because last year was Gastard defense, and with Quesada. Quesada has another kind of approach in defense. So they have to understand which is the better one, which fits more. He said also about the attacking style. It's a lovely style of play. The players seems to really be involved into this and they believe into this. But the fact is, for example, they don't want to see those exit strategy we saw. So box kick is going to come back. Kicking game more like tactical kicking game is gonna grow more into our game plan, and this is something cool, because we're gonna see something different too again and see how he's gonna everything follow up his idea, because he has still to meet the leaders, the group leaders of the team, and from there he's gonna decide how we can do everything. But as he said, the attack is the roof of the house. We have to build this. So maybe answering what you're saying, the breakdown is going to be crucial in this situation. Kicking game, aerial battle, catching these eyeballs. Maybe those going to be the big stuff he's going to put his hands in. But I can see him doing both, attack and defense, no problem.
Yeah, and there's also one last thing, I think, which is really important, actually. So there's rumours at the moment that Sakev is allegedly looking to step down, and the person that is going to replace him is Gusted, right? So he's potentially joining England again. I wonder, Yeah. So this is pretty. It's there's a few rumors. It's pretty well sort of like regarded as what's going to happen. So I wonder if there was ever, you know, Gus had having spent, you know, a season and a half, two seasons in Italy, if he was ever contemplating going, you know, to join Quesada from Stade Français to the national team, right? So yeah, it's just speculation, but it's interesting, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And another speculation, Mike. Let's see who's gonna came out of the war stuff, so Argentina stuff, because Quesada, everybody in Argentina are really jealous of what we achieve having Quesada on, because everybody was thinking after Checa is Quesada, is Quesada. For Quesada was the top scorer of the 19 Rugby World Cup, 99 Rugby World Cup, for example. He's a myth, a legend in Argentina, but they are going with Contepomi more. But then let's say, for example, Bordeaux is the scrum coach. Maybe he's going to leave, or maybe somebody else is going to come and follow him later. I don't know, because Checa didn't say anything yet after what he did. So maybe some of those people can come to us. And actually one is already into our project, which is German Fernandez. He was a skill coach, attacking coach, development, high performance development program of Argentina. And he is now under 20, like, let's see, all the youth project is in charge of that. But again, sticking to Quesada stuff, maybe 1 year if they found somebody else. So exciting time. And another thing, we have the Six Nations in 2 months. He's going to coach maybe for a week before the first game with the foreign players, Capuozzo, Ioane, Pajrelo, Allan, all these guys. He's going to have it only for a week. And then he's going to have Six Nations. In the summer, we're going to play against USA and Canada. And in November, in Italy, we're going to play against Argentina, a tier 2 team to be confirmed.
Portugal.
And All Blacks. Man, we're going to play against All Blacks after the 96 points. So, all big stuff, guys. And Jesus, mamma mia. Jesus Bambino. But all big games already in November, if you think about it, because the tier 2 can be Georgia. Think about it. Can be Uruguay, can be Portugal.
I think we need to set... I hope it is. I think we need to settle that, to be honest. I feel like we need to. We need to. And that will forever be an open wound for us, I think, until that's settled, in my eyes at least.
Yeah, I agree. I think we need to play that. I think that would be a very smart move.
Otto's quite a good like smiling. But for those of you guys listening, Otto's just smiling, saying nothing. Otto thought you were worried.
Mamma mia, yeah. No, I'm thinking already how we... we supporters, what we should think, what we want from Quesada into the Six Nations. March, what do you want from Quesada in the Six Nations?
Well, it's so great difficult question, because it's so tricky to know. Or right. Really, he's going to have so little time. What on earth? We can't really have any. I can't really have any expectation, because he's going to have so little time. One, with players, especially the ones playing abroad, and two, with his coaches as well. So throwing all of that together, he's got 2 months. I really don't know what to expect, and part of me thinks, well, I shouldn't expect anything, because the Six Nations is going to be a little bit of a, we don't really know what's going to come our way after the end of the World Cup. Everyone's going to be thinking that we're going to get thumped again. So I don't really know what's going to happen in the Six Nations. I really don't. I feel like we were taught some pretty difficult lessons at the end of the World Cup. So it's going to be a case of licking our wounds a bit, but then we're then going to have to try and play under a new coach in such a short space of time. It doesn't feel. I'm not filled with confidence for the Six Nations.
I'm gonna go ballsy, to be honest.
We're gonna win it.
Not that three ballsy. I would like to see a victory, considering how close we came to some of the better teams in the Six Nations. And I think part of it's because we caught people by surprise by how we played. But actually, we've proven that when we get front football, we can play some attractive attacking rugby. And the next step was to sort of filter through maybe some more of the strategic game that we've lacked, because we've been going for, you know, high risk, high reward. Maybe we need to play it slightly more conservative. But I think we could absolutely beat a team like Wales. I know, obviously, they've played some great rugby at the World Cup, but, you know, our team also going to be that much older, that much wiser. And, you know, we didn't come far from Scotland. Like, there's just, why can't we say we expect a victory? Like, that's what he was brought in for, right? He was brought in to win. That was the mandate from the Federation. Like, why can't we say, as Italian fans, our expectation is that we win a game? So that's my expectation. My expectation is we win a game. Don't care who it's against. Don't care who it's not. A game.
England
in Rome would be massive, right?
That's what I dream of.
But you know who's saying result is not urgent?
I know he said that, but we know
the
that's
president
not true.
Of the federation. I know, but it's tricky the way the things switch, because he was expecting some victories. As now,
he was expecting us to reach the quarterfinal of the Rugby World Cup.
Man, that's true. So there was something,
and now he expects weird, nothing.
I stick with nothing. Yes, we can do it. We can have the exploit in one game. England can be that game. Can be that game against Wales. It's changing already, but more. But it's weird. I think we have to be patient too with Quesada and not just burn it after the Six Nations. But something that we can do so easily, guys. That's the point. The Argentina, and he doesn't understand anything. Let's bring an Italian coach in. That's something that sometimes you heard or you read into Boomerland Facebook of Italy and stuff like that.
No, we're in for a penny, we're in for a pound now. Like, the king is dead, long live the king, right? So, like, he is the person that we have to support unequivocally. That's the way it is, right, in sport.
I guess
things transition. We have to support, and I guess
the fact that he's been brought in to turn us into a team that don't just compete, they win games, so technically our expectation should be that we win a game at Six Nations, I guess, and then compete in all five games and win a game.
Yeah,
has to be the expectation for me, given what he's been brought in for.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's it, right? If winning was an absolute for one, winning has to be the absolute for both, right? And there's an element where, you know, maybe the president has maybe had time to sit back and realize about the undue pressures that he's put on these incredibly young players. Because that, let's be honest, right? If the expectation is your president telling you that you need to win a game against the All Blacks that you've never won before at a World Cup, a knockout game, right, where they've had 14 days to prepare to play for you guys specifically, that's a lot of pressure to put on like 22, 23 year old players. Maybe he's had time to sit back and realize, actually, that wasn't the best decision that I've made as president. Maybe he's had time, right? If he hasn't, then we have issues, right? Candidly, gentlemen, if we have a conversation in the Six Nations where we're putting undue pressures on these kids to try and perform, right, and they're looking at the win as opposed to the performance, then we have issues. But my expectation as an Italian fan is that we win a game this Six Nations, because I think we probably would have won a game under Kieran Crowley. So my expectation is that we continue moving forward and not backwards. That's my expectation.
Love it.
I agree. Right, I think we better touch on the Rugby World Cup final before we say our goodbyes. Octavio, I'm assuming you're a very happy man.
Man, I'm so happy. No, I'm really, really happy. There was everything in this final. I loved it. I loved the way the drama that was behind the victory at the end. There was a lot of drama, and the way they believed in what they were doing for so long, because this is the way Jacques Ninaber, Erasmus, Colisi, and all the winners of the World Cup 4 years ago, they believe in everything. Felix Jones. And it's something that outstanding, because they never change. Like, this is our style. We're going to bring our style. We're going to bring something that we're going to fuck you up with physicality. And they did it, actually. But also, because something that I feel in this after the final, after the victory, was like fair play to New Zealand, fair play to New Zealand, fair play to New Zealand. I didn't see a lot of people saying, hey, good job, South Africa. In Italy, for example, I heard a lot of people saying, oh, the anti-rugby, the rugby didn't won the rugby final. And that sucks, because you can win in so different ways. Attacking from your exit strategy in first phase and scoring against Samoa. But you can play also smashing people with physicality, but also trying to do stuff, because you attempt three box kick, they almost score two try, and then, guys, I know we're gonna speak a lot maybe about red card, yellow card, but in general, massive losing Bonambi in the second minute, man, and putting inside the Dion Fury, 37 years old, 20 tackles, Dutoy, 28, oof, huge stuff.
Dutoy was just a monster. He is a monster.
Player.
And Mike, this is just a team that will just consistently take shit from everybody, and everyone can say what they want about them, but they've gone back to back, and they just seem to be able to beat everyone. It doesn't matter how they do it. They can do it ugly. They can do it pretty. There just seems to be no way of beating them, and they find a way every single time. And you have to just take your hat off and say, well done.
For sure. I spoke to a couple of my mates at halftime, and they were like, oh, what's happened to New Zealand? Like, why have they not turned up? I'm like, well, it's not that they haven't turned up. Have you seen how aggressive that blitz is? Have you seen how well they were managing, like, the kick defense, the short kick defense, like how well they're working at set piece, how much they, like, the first player off the floor after every tackle was a South African player. Like, they just work so hard. So you could say, yes, New Zealand didn't turn up, and I don't think that was their best game, but that's not because that was New Zealand not wanting to turn up. It's because South Africa suffocated them with pressure. They played so well. And I also think, you know, when if you, like Otto said, if you give credit where credit's due with how they managed to adapt, the best teams adapt, the worst teams die. If you don't evolve, you die. That's sport, right? You have to try and work out a way to win, and they found a way to win. And was it clear, like, was it as pretty as it could have been? No, like you said, March. But hey, like, all that matters now is they've got their name scribbled on that trophy, and that's all that matters, right? New Zealand had the opportunities to win, and they didn't take them. Like, the kicks weren't great, and you know, that's sport. Right. That's sport.
Red card, the right call.
I actually thought New Zealand were very lucky with the first one for it not to be a red, because he dropped his weight onto his knee. And
Shannon Fitzalon Bonambi.
Yeah, I couldn't pronounce his name, and I didn't want to risk it.
Bonambi.
Yeah, that one. So I thought that was a red when I first watched it. I'm very, very surprised they rescinded that. That was a red all day long. And I thought Khaleesi's could have been a red. I think yellow's probably fair. I mean, for me, that's not the issues. I think Wayne Barnes maybe struggled a little bit because of how much was going on at the breakdown. He needed more support from the linesmen. There was a lot. They were competing at every, like I said, they were suffocating them. And, you know, we have the benefit of multiple angles. We have the benefit of replays. I just think it wasn't from, if we're being really critical, right, because it was a great World Cup final, can't take anything away from either teams. I think the officiating probably was a little bit under par, but I don't think it matters. I genuinely don't think it matters at the end. I think if all the decisions were correct, I think South Africa win comfortably, because we would have seen a red card after 2 minutes and South Africa would have lapped that up. So, that, you know, like if you weigh it up, it probably doesn't make too much of a difference. But I think we need to have a separate discussion about officiating, because there's too much going on for just one like official to make a decision, and the TMO comes in at the worst time. It's just, this aside, I think there's probably a separate discussion with World Rugby that needs to happen, you know?
Sure.
I add the scrum too into the situation, because I always think maybe some spider cam. So
yeah, that'd be brilliant.
That can help if you have a referee that is going to scrum only that thing. He's going to officiate only that thing from a video, so he can give the angle from the top and say, hey, it's happening this, it's happening that. This guy pushed down earlier. Or maybe we can trust maybe a couple of international big props. They know their stuff. I'm going to throw a name there. Alex Corbisero, BJ Botha. People that know what is the scrum, that can help a lot, I think, in understanding what's going on. And then eye tackles, that is, look how different is the approach, for example, from the New Zealand Super Rugby. So the 20 minutes red card, how changed the attitude into game, because they used to play the 20 minutes game and you come back.
Yeah,
and then for the first time they had a man completely out for the full game, which was Sam Kane, and usually they can bring back a player in. So it's something they have to review, actually. Yes, they have to review all the situation about Tegels, understanding this degree, player safety is something, entertaining is something else we're looking forward, but oof, huge.
I'm going to say something quite radical here, and it's because I've had this discussion elsewhere. Like, if we had someone like, this is going to sound really bad and everyone's going to be like, no, it's a game. But genuinely speaking, if we had two referees, right, one to focus on the breakdown, one to focus on, you know, everything else that's going on, right? So, like, you need a referee just for the breakdown, let's be honest, right? Because they need to see what's happening. They need to see what, you know, are people going in, supporting their way, all of the different nuances that makes rugby rugby, you know, oh, have they put their hands down first, all of that jazz. And then someone just to look at everything else, maybe even just offside or something, like having, and again, I know it's a radical change, but having two referees to be able to articulate what's going on, and they have to be in agreement, right? Because there will be disagreements, but that would make the game fairer. It'll probably make the game slightly slower because there'll be more penalties, or we just outlaw everything. Like, it has to be one or the others. We've had this discussion before. Like, there's too much that comes down to opinion, and like, we just need to get that out of the game, in my eyes.
I just find a way. We will also, I feel like with that, we're starting to fall down that the rugby just becoming over officiated, and we're getting to a point where the referee, which, are we trying to find a perfect game here, or are we just? I just feel like there are already too many laws. There are already too many variations on laws, and we're trying to. Seems like we're trying to create a perfect game where the game is officiated perfectly and played perfectly. When in reality, I don't think that's what we all want.
That's not what I want, but I don't want unfair advantage, right? So how do we remove that obstacle from the game? You either remove some of the more nuanced rules, ones which are harder to see, you know, in a millimeter of a millisecond of a tackle, or, you know, like take those away. So like the high tackles, if it's a genuine attempt to get low, regardless whether there's accidental head like on that, we need to remove that then, because it's either all or it's nothing, because it's so much that can come down to conjecture. Like we've got 8 minutes where a bunker review, we've got three people reviewing one thing anyway. So how is it that, you know, we're saying having someone just making a decision on, you know, on the deck, right? They have two agreement, like two TMOs have to put their flags up to agree that a ball's gone over. Why can't we have two refs just saying, okay, yeah, we're fine with that. That's a red card. Cool. Done. Like it's opinion, but then there's two people, you know, speaking about it. The assistant refs can give their viewpoint, you know? That's the way I see it anyway. I just think we either sanitize all of it or we sanitize none of it, you know?
Who's going to be the first player is going to be sent off in the Six Nation?
French second row.
A French second row.
It's always a safe bet, isn't it? It's always
I was hoping bet. Somebody against Italy, you guys.
That'd be great if we could play against 14 men. Yeah.
Like an Ellis Genge out, a Ben Earl out. Nice. Or maybe Mr. Shoulder Boy, which I love anyway.
Pass. Yeah, he yeah.
With Seb Negri, there is something to organize since last year, yeah. Right?
That's it. We should try and get a charity fight between those two.
Yes.
I think Seb would be keen with it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
Was fine.
Anyway, gentlemen, I feel like that is probably, and we're approaching an hour, I feel like that's probably a good place to finish for this week. A pleasure as always. Looking forward to the weekend. URC is back. Obviously, Benetton Lions and Zebra are playing the Bulls. The Stormers.
The Bulls. The Bulls are the Zebra. I was right. Yeah.
I was right. Thank you all for joining us, and we will speak again. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and follow us all on our socials. And that's it for this week. Ciao, Mike. Ciao, Ottavio. See you very soon. And to the rest of you, we will speak to you all very, very soon. Ta-da.
Ciao.
Ciao.